Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Nancy Dixon and Leslie Petty about their new book of essays, Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History. It's always a joy to welcome Nancy Dixon to The Reading Life. Nancy teaches English and chairs the English program at Dillard University. She's a prolific and insightful author of many books about New Orleans literature and history, and she was the executive editor of the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities' beautiful book, New Orleans and the World, the wonderful tricentennial anthology. And also, she's the creator of NO Lit, 200 Years of New Orleans Literature. Joining us by phone is Leslie Petty, who's professor of English and the T.K. Young Chair of English Literature at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee. The two of them are the co-editors of Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History, a collection of essays from the American Literature Symposium, from the American Literature Association Symposium, The City in Literature. Nancy, welcome back.
Thanks, Susan. It's always good to be here.
Leslie, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much. The pleasure's mine.
Well, tell us how you all met and decided to do this together.
I can tell you that Nancy and I met a long time ago in the early 1990s. We were in graduate school at LSU. And so when I got there, I came fresh out of undergraduate. Nancy was already through her coursework, and she was definitely one of the cool kids in the program.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Can you imagine, right? Yeah, of course. So, you know, it took me a little while to sort of break into her circle, but she and I were laughing about this recently. I think our friendship was cemented at her surprise 40th birthday party, which was thrown at a strip club outside of Baton Rouge. So, I guess she thought if I could hang there, then I could be part of the
crowd. That's right. That sounds very appropriate.
and then we fast forward to 2015. I was directing the American Literature Association Symposium that you just mentioned. And there were so many great papers and, a large portion were on New Orleans literature, and I thought, well, wow, this could be a great collection, but I needed a co-editor, I needed help, and Nancy was the obvious choice given her expertise in Louisiana literature, New Orleans especially, you know, all the wonderful books that you just mentioned. So she and I talked about it at that symposium where she was presenting, and we've been working on it in one form or another ever since then.
Well, it's such a rich collection because it covers so many time periods and so many different books. And it's just 13 essays, but it's jam-packed and fun-filled, as they say. You know, it's a lot of fun to read. So talk about your criteria and what you were looking for in these essays.
This is Leslie again. As I said, we saw this connection of New Orleans and literature. And so when we first started soliciting essays, we put out an open call in addition to the symposium presenters. We really just wanted that idea of a New Orleans connection, author, setting, you know, what have you. But then as we went along, we started shaping it, and we wanted, just what you noted, we wanted a variety, not just of text, but of approaches, and we wanted historical breadth, because we really wanted that diversity of perspectives on what the city means and, you know, how it's represented. And then I think it became important for us to expand the conversation into questions of immigration, for example. You know, as time passed, I think more and more we could see the connections between what we were working on and things that were happening in the world. And we had that essay on the yellow fever epidemic and moral contagion. And when we lived through the pandemic, that seemed to resonate in new ways. And then, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement. And so these essays have actually developed over time, and we've worked on them to really try to connect them with the broader cultural moment.
We wanted also to bring it up to current books, as we do with Mem Shannon and, I mean, current writers in their works. And so we, you know, we wanted to do that too. And of course, you know, I really start on the earlier stuff is where I focus my studies. But so when you said you loved some of the essays in here, I certainly did too. And that one was one of my favorites.
Well, it's so interesting because we're in these boom times of scholarship about the transatlantic slave trade and slavery in general, I think. And this collection reflects that, of course. And the first book, well, the book begins with an essay about a book I've never read and never really heard of called Blake or the Huts of America by Martin Delaney. And Paul Fess is the scholar who's writing about that. So tell us why that book is important. And did you know about it? Had you read it a long time ago?
I had not read it a long time ago, but I read it after I heard Paul read his essay. And one of the things that I loved about it is the diaspora. And you know, it starts in the Huts of America. It's down here in New Orleans, but it moves to the Mississippi Valley. It moves to Cuba. It moves all over. And this is all right in the middle of the war. Mm-hmm. It's serialized, and he's publishing this stuff, and readers are reading it. And then it stops.
Yeah.
Because they can't, the weekly magazine, the weekly Anglo magazine goes on a hiatus. But it gives a beautiful look at New Orleans, the population of New Orleans, racial makeup of New Orleans, the international citizenry of the city, which still today you can see.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I just, when he read his essay, I said, well, I have to go read that. And
well, do you think there are lots of other books like this that we just don't know about yet still?
Well, since this one was serialized and, you know, and kind of hard to find anyway until someone wrote it, maybe so.
You know, looking for other texts like this, we've lost so much with the destruction of especially Black periodicals from this period, you know, and like Nancy said, this one just being cut off because of the moment. And so this stuff's got to be out there, right? And this book is so interesting because it's not typical abolitionist stuff. The book is really trying to imagine an international insurrection, like a transatlantic insurrection. Uh-huh. And I really like the way that it sees New Orleans as the contact point for the U.S. and the rest of the Black Atlantic, right? And New Orleans sits right at that hub in the vision of the book. It's really an important text.
Now, Nancy, you wrote an essay about Les Sennel and some Creole writers, these poets who have long fascinated you. You have a real passion for them.
I do indeed. I want to say one thing, that my first book was on Sally Rhett Romain.
True.
Her husband took part in the statue in the Liberty Place battle, and there was a statue homage to that battle, and they moved it, and they put this tribute to Les Sennel there in that very spot.
Ah.
And I just thought that was so beautiful. And these men were, for all intents and purposes, born free, educated, intelligent, wealthy. Then all of a sudden, they're not.
Yeah.
And very few of them stayed. Almost all of them emigrated, some of them more famously than others. But Armand Lanus stayed and dedicated his life to education of people of color in the city. And schools named after him, and books written and textbooks written. And he was really, you know, that also touched me as an educator. And then, of course, the most famous, Victor Séjour.
Yes,
you know,
he went to
playwright and poet, and Napoleon's sort of scribe secretary for a while, and loved Napoleon, wrote many peons to him. And his plays were wildly popular for a time in Paris, and then they fell out of
favor. Well, remind people what Les Sennel translates to.
It translates to the mayhaws, the little berries that grow right now mostly on the North Shore, and that young Creole men of color would bring to their lover's mother as a gift in the springtime. And it was sweet and out of respect and love and kindness for their children. And they still have mayhaws. They make mayhaw jelly still.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the thing I remember about them was that wonderful book about Creole poetry in the newspaper. Every one of them individually was so interesting.
Indeed.
And, you know, you could write a book about each single one of these poets practically.
I have one student that just submitted a paper today on them.
Oh, that's so exciting. Doesn't that make you feel great?
Yeah, it does.
I love it. And that is an incredible literary landmark that's associated with New Orleans.
True.
You know, the first book of African American poetry. It's incredible. If you're just joining us, my guests are Nancy Dixon and Leslie Petty, talking about their new co-edited book of essays, Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History. Now, two of the essays are about the awakening, and that's an exciting book for all women. Everybody loves this book, but it's especially exciting for us, I think, because we've lived during its rediscovery, you know, seen it come out of obscurity into popular awareness.
And Leslie and I were both taught by the professor.
We were.
Emily Toth.
Emily Toth, a woman who did that.
I know. So talk about those essays, which are so interesting.
This is lovely. I teach the awakening a lot. And what I really love about these essays is that they really are new readings of the book. Sometimes it's hard to come up with something new to say about the awakening because it is so rich, you know, it's so scholars have been interested in it for so long. But I very much like the way that the Karina Evans Hofpower, you know, thinks about sort of contrast Edna Pontellier with Beyonce and sort of for music.
Yeah, I know.
Right? I love that opening. And yeah, and the way that she, you know, then goes on to point out that that paradox of how the racial turmoil is glossed over, whitewashed, if you will, in the book. But yet there's all this interesting use of images of enslavement and chains and all of that to think about Edna's soul slavery. That's the language in the book. So it's thinking about slavery, but doing it in, you know, coming at it from a kind of indirect angle, I guess, that, that wants to detach it from actual enslavement of African American people.
And I especially like Moving from the Inside Out as well. That was a really interesting essay to me.
Yeah.
And Heidi came to New Orleans to study Chopin, and she made the connection between the Matwilda von Meissenberg. And it was fascinating that she did make this connection. If I didn't think it was a little bit of a stretch at first, but that was early in her research. And she managed to dig up and find more that really made this, you know, possible, that they were both walkers, independent women, both loved the city. Chopin went to Germany. It was a complete fresh twist on this book that I don't think Leslie or I had either of us had read.
It does situate the awakening in, again, that sort of international conversation. And I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, really think about the cross-pollination between Chopin and, you know, and a German writer. And I thought that was really fascinating.
Well, and we're also in a period of books about books people read. I mean, like, there's a new book, Jane Austen's Bookshelf.
That's right.
And you really, it is really interesting to think about what books they read that we might not be aware of. You know, here comes this book out of nowhere.
Like the book we were just talking about, that, you know, that we'd never heard of that book before. So, yeah, there's, I mean, who knows what they were reading? And I want to see what Emily Dickinson was reading.
I know. I just want to look at people's bookshelves, actually.
That's what you know. Do, Susan.
I do, really.
Don't we all?
I don't know. It can get to be a perversion, I think, after a while. Tell me what you're reading.
That's where we find you at a cocktail party.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
The library.
Oh, man. Now, one of the most delightful essays in the poetry section of this book is about Mem Shannon's CD, A Cab Driver Sings the Blues. And I went back and listened to that CD because I was so inspired by this essay. So talk a little bit about this spoken word essay.
Well, I remember when I first heard Mem Shannon, it was at a friend of mine's wedding in Virginia, and she played him as she was walking out.
Oh, wow.
It was an outside wedding.
Cool.
Yeah, it was. But this is one of my favorite essays, too. Leslie and I were talking about this one. It's one of my favorite essays, too. And you know, the singing cab driver, he just cuts to the heart of this city.
Yep.
To the problems, the beauty, the day-to-day life, the racism, the privilege, the chauvinism. I mean, it's, you know, it's all there. I hear you twice, you know. I mean, his language is just, it's so poetic and gorgeous and musical, even written, the written word. A miserable bastard, that, you know, the elitist tourist. How many of us have met that
guy? Tourist, yep.
The idea of the cab as being sort of the epicenter, right? It is a spot where so many people intersect, not at the same time, though, right? They all come there, and he hears all, like, the variety of stories in that one spot because as he's moving around the city.
Well, and it's just a different kind of voice because, you know, you talk about voices and visions in your title, and this is really one of the great voices of New Orleans.
Indeed.
And of course, you couldn't have this book without something about the moviegoer and Walker Percy.
My favorite part that Edward paints in this essay is Binks's sort of removal from wealthy uptown New Orleans to Chili Gentilly, and Walker Percy's own move to the more sort of sedate and separated, at least by a bridge, a causeway, move to Covington. And the perspective that I think both of these, I mean, I think that Percy gained in enabling him to write about Binks.
I love to drive by that house where he wrote the moviegoer, you know, which is firmly planted in New Orleans uptown.
Indeed.
You know. So tell us about some of the favorite essays of yours as you were working on this.
I have to say that the ones I spent the most time with were the German, the one on Heidi Podlasly's Labyrinths is Kate Chopin, partly because I spent a lot of time with her. Mm-hmm. And then the first one that we discussed, Martin Delaney's book, Blake or the Huts of America. I had never read that book. And it's long. So I spent a lot of time with that. And that was really sort of eye-opening to me. I had, because, you know, I also don't like when I miss something that's that big, but.
Point of pride. Yeah. What about you, Leslie?
So I kind of like, I have favorite constellations of some of the essays. One essay is Tierney Powell's essay on Joy Harjo's poem, New Orleans.
I love that one.
It's fantastic. And I'd never thought of Joy Harjo in relation to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But it gives a whole different perspective on the space of the city and what lies underneath and, you know, and what's in the past. And I just thought it was such a joy and a revelation. Like, you know, like Nancy said, I don't like to not know about things. And so to learn about that poem and that connection was really interesting. And then the second essay that I really found compelling was Ruth Kayate's essay on Eudora Welty and Zora Neale Hurston. And those are two writers that I teach and I know really well. But again, they're not people I think of when I, you know, think of New Orleans literature, but she makes such a interesting case for how their time that they spent here influenced their later writing. And, you know, and she also talks about rightly about how different their New Orleanses were. You know, Welty's was Galatoire's, right? And that she spent time in a more, you know, elite environment. And then Hurston, you know, came here, was studying deeply hoodoo and voodoo, and that shows up in her writing. And she became quite adept at it, apparently, at the practice while she was here. So I like the way that that constellation of essays makes me see writers that I've known for a long time in new ways and helps me understand how the wide influence that New Orleans has, you know, on American literature.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Nancy Dixon and Leslie Petty, talking about their new co-edited book of essays, Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History. In an anthology like this, I think it's so important to have essays that show how writers came here and were transformed.
Yes.
Because it's essentially a transformative atmosphere, I think, still for so many writers.
We were.
Yeah.
Yes, right?
And the one I wanted to say is I just want to say that I taught Brenda Marie Osby's two of her poems last week, and I gave this essay to one of my students, The Slave Brick Streets and Women's Work by Sherry Evans. And so I had read that before I started teaching her poetry, and it was really beautiful to read that and then talk about Brenda Marie Osby's poetry.
Well, tell us a little bit more about her Red Brick Streets.
Well, you know, she writes about New Orleans, and she writes about the streets of New Orleans, but we're talking about Black folks in New Orleans with Brenda Marie Osby. Usually. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, but the one I taught, but I didn't teach these Red Brick Streets. I taught her poems about water and her uncle's death and Katrina and post-Katrina and the Red Brick Streets going away and sinking underwater. That actually is when I started reading her work.
You also have an essay in this book about a book that I really was impressed by, and that's Patricia Smith's Blood Dazzler. Mm. Which is a great poetry collection, post-Katrina. So let's enlighten some folks about that.
Leslie, you want to talk about Blood Dazzler?
Sure. Yes. No, I appreciated what Nancy said earlier about how it was really important to us to bring the collection up to almost, you know, the current moment. And
right.
Blood Dazzler is about Katrina, and it's about the ways that media covered Katrina, the ways that Black bodies were kind of put on display in order to create sympathy and to create kind of outrage. But ironically, because in some ways, you know, the Black body is seen as disposable. And so it was ripe for that kind of being put on display. The poems are this interesting meditation on, you know, what she calls Black suffering in public, right?
During Katrina, my partner, Bill Abner, and I had to leave our house. We stayed, and we had to row out in a little dinghy with two dogs and two cats and a neighbor. And we got to Canal Street, and this Black couple was up waist deep in their water walking toward us, and they stopped us and warned about a body hanging on a stop sign.
Oh,
and they said, "I just want to tell you, I just want to warn you. We just want to tell you there's a body up there, and it's on the stop sign, and it looks like something different." And she was like referring to a lynching or something. She said, "But they're just trying to save the bodies, baby. They just want be able to find the bodies, so they're just hanging them." Because I think of this woman all the time, and especially.
Sure.
During Katrina, but I think of her all anniversaries, but I think of her all the time and how symbolic that one body was.
Of course.
Wow.
In this city and what happened in this city and purposefully.
Yeah.
That's a question.
Wow. Well, you know, I know both of you are interested in the idea of the city and literature, and that was, you know, the whole part of this conference. Mm-hmm. New Orleans just seems singular as a city and what it produces, the range of reactions to it and the affection it inspires in people.
And the writing.
Yeah.
It inspires in people. I mean, it's true. It is. It's just, it's downright inspiring. It's moving. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but when I moved here, my father, I was a little bad and up to no good. And my father's, and I wanted to go to up east to school, and I got accepted. And he said, "No, you're going to New Orleans." And I said, "Well, why?" And he said, "Because you'll love it."
Ah,
no, that's great.
And his brother was here, and he was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and indeed, he had to bail me out more than once. But,
that's all right.
Yeah, but he said, "Because you'll love it." And it's, and, I mean, I've left for spurts, but I've never left.
And I never get tired of reading about it.
I don't either.
I really don't.
Or writing about it.
But, you know, comparing New Orleans to, I guess it's because we're so old.
Yeah.
That's a big part of
Not
it.
Leslie, but we.
Yes, of course. The city is so old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think of L.A. I think of Chicago. I think of New York. What are the other, you know, Boston?
Speaking of someone who doesn't live in New Orleans, but did live in Baton Rouge for a couple of years and spent a good bit of time in New Orleans, it really is unique with from everything, the laws, right? The food, the language, the influence there is not like the influence that you find in any other American city, right? The history and the language, it is a place unto itself. I know Nancy posted on Facebook on Mardi Gras, you know, everywhere else, it's Tuesday morning, right? And I do remember when I lived there, you know, Mardi Gras was a holiday. We all got out of off school. That didn't happen anywhere else in the whole country.
Well, I was thinking as I read this book, where else would you get scholarship that's so exciting and interesting? I mean, because this is really a pleasure to read. You know, it's an academic book, but it's a New Orleans academic book, and it makes, you know, it's a joy.
It came out of a conference of people who wanted to come to New Orleans and write on New Orleans. They wanted to come here, and I think that they all had been here, but I'm not positive. But they certainly wanted to come here and certainly wanted to do the research and the writing on the city.
Well, it all shines through because it's really a pleasure to read. We've been talking with Nancy Dixon and Leslie Petty, who are co-editors of Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History. Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan.
Nancy, you too.
Thank
always.
You, as always. Thank you.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Michael Burt presents a story time, Michael the Wildlife Detective, Saturday, April 26th at 11 at Garden District Bookshop. Katie Cordes presents a story time, Pinky Polite Teaches Louisiana Manners, Saturday, April 26th at noon at Garden District Bookshop. Nancy Dixon and Leslie Patty discuss and sign their new book, Voices and Visions, Essays on New Orleans Literary History, Saturday, April 26th at 2 at Garden District Bookshop. Annie B. Jones discusses and signs Ordinary Time, Lessons Learned While Staying Put, Tuesday, April 29th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Jana Hardy and Kiana Stewart discuss and sign Black Market Vintage, Tuesday, April 29th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. And coming up next weekend, the Black Ink Book Festival at the Pavilion of Two Sisters. That's at City Park, Saturday, May 3rd, from 11 to 2 p.m. Meet the team at Community Book Center, as well as local authors and publishers. Free admission.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.